Hi everyone, I'm Heidi Rogers, and this is Tell the Others. I wanted to create a place for meaningful conversation, life lessons, and parenting hacks. Sometimes I chat to interesting people, sometimes I answer questions about parenting or life stuff, and sometimes I just rant. These episodes are filled with stories and insights that made me say, ugh, I just have to tell the others. So let's dive in to hear what we can learn today. Hello, everyone. Thanks again for joining us for another episode of Tell the Others. I'm joined today by a good friend of mine for a very long time, and also my financial planner, Brendan Murray. Hello, Brendan.
Hi, Heidi. How are you?
Good. Good to see you in this weird circumstance of not seeing you in person, but seeing you on a computer screen.
Yeah.
So I spoke to Brendan a few weeks ago saying I thought it'd be cool to get him on the podcast to talk about a whole variety of things. And some of the things, the reason why you popped into my head, as I mentioned you before, is one, you're my Tony Robbins gateway drug. You are the one who exposed me to Tony and made me see these. Oh my God, what would that have been like 13 years ago, 12 years ago or something?
Yeah, really far.
Long time ago. And then also the other thing I find, so your mindset and the way that you look at the world, I think is cool. And that's, I think, made me ask you, I think, initially about Tony and how we even got on the topic. And then the other thing, so, and then also the financial aspect that you know money, you understand money, you understand investment, you understand insurance, you know all of that, which I am that's a work in progress for me, a learning skill set that I'm building. So I thought you might have some wisdom on that. And then the other aspect was just your understanding and appreciation of the loss experience and having lost your mom somewhat suddenly to cancer. And then your dad, how long ago was that your dad passed away?
5 years.
Jeez, it's already been five years.
Coming up 5 years. It's,
wow.
It even feels weird to say that, to be honest. It doesn't feel that at all.
Wow. Yeah. And how many years?
Time flies.
Yeah. How many years since your mom?
So that would be coming up 17 years this year.
Wow.
It's hard to even fathom that, to be honest. It still feels, to a degree, an element of, you know, still fresh.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So those kind of, and I guess the thing with your parents was, I remember when we first spoke about your mom, the way that you viewed it and processed it was just, I don't know, different. I think a lot of people you hear when they go through something like that, the desperation, the grief, the loss, the sadness, which is totally appropriate. Like, I'm not making a judgment on that, but it just felt different when we spoke about your mom that first time, of just how you had that space, you had that experience, but then you shifted out and then took it into being a positive. And I don't know, I just thought that was cool. And then the way that I remember talking to you after your dad passed away, and then that concept of just having no parents anymore and how, and still being so young, how odd that just felt to me in my mind. And then watching you kind of navigate it, just, I'm sure it wasn't effortless, but it looked effortless in just how you're able to flow with life. And I think your honesty and vulnerability and able to talk about these things, which I don't think is common, especially for lots of Aussie dudes. I don't know. I just think, yeah. So I think you're very interesting. Yeah. So yeah.
Well, where do you want to start? I appreciate you thinking that, you know, even now, just, you know, hearing you even talk about mum and dad, and even me, like, we were talking just before we started now, and we were just having a great chat, and I just feel in my chest now the emotion of that whole coming forth again. It's, you know, and I don't expect that, but, you know, that would even have been the case. But although it seems like on the outside that I was able to navigate that reasonably well, it was when I think back to mum, it was far and away up until that point, the hardest thing I've ever had to deal with in my life. I feel it now. I think what happened for me was, having such an amazing childhood, to a degree, made that whole process even harder, because I had so much that I'd lost with mum that, yeah, you know, you deal with it as best you can. And initially I didn't deal with it well at all. In my mind, you know, when you're going through it at the time, I didn't feel like I was handling it well at all, and I didn't know how to handle it.
What does that look like though? Not knowing, I mean, now that you look back on it, what do you think not handling it well looks like? What, how did that manifest for you?
I couldn't live my life like I normally would, which makes complete sense. Like, I'm very much about setting a goal, obtaining and achieving that goal, whatever it might be. And when you go through a grieving process, everything just gets derailed and your focus changes and your, what matters to you just seems to matter less. And that just really is so disrupted to your life and how you would normally live it. But trying to deal with it, trying to deal with the grief and not having those positive aspects in your life anymore was really challenging. And at the time with Mum, you know, I just felt lost and I felt that there was this hole in me that would just never be filled again. And because Mum was such an enormous influence on my life in a positive way, you know, I think now about how I raised my son Levi, I think a lot about how Mum would react to certain situations and the closeness that I had with Mum. I want Levi and I to have that same closeness. So I try and model the way that I parent Levi very much around how Mum parented me. And, you know, we are quite often a product of our childhood, aren't we? But I felt that knowing how much Mum meant to me, if I could have that same relationship with Levi, then I'll been a pretty successful dad. But yeah, I couldn't operate like I'd normally operate. That was sort of how I felt at the time. But, you know, just the grief was enormous. And I think what I learned, and to hear you say that it looks like on the outside, I navigated it really well. You know, I don't feel that way at all, because when you're in it and how you're feeling, and it doesn't feel that way. But what I came to the conclusion, I guess, was at the beginning of these things, it's just so raw. Like, it's like that open wound, and anytime you brush that wound, it opens up again. And what I found, which you will hear a lot, but it's so true, that over time, like I said, I can feel that loss even now. Over time, that wound heals a bit and you're able to deal with things better when it comes up. It's not to say that I don't miss Mum, or that, you know, that I don't think about it. I do most days, you know, I still feel her presence, you know, even now 100%, and that I feel that she's there. And the positive view that I have on it now is that I've always had a belief that everything happens for a reason.
Even in death, because I feel like that statement, I can hold that statement, but not for really shitty things. Like, I can go, right, everything happens for a reason, with a car park or you avoided a car accident, or I don't know. But with death, I'm just like, I can't subscribe to it with death. Cause I just think, honestly, I just think bullshit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're spot on. And that's exactly how I felt, because I've always felt that about, for some reason, I've always felt that things happen for a reason. There's always a way. There is a way to get past whatever the issue is right now. I will find it. The only reason I haven't gotten past is because I haven't found the answer yet. It's there. I've just got to find it. I've always felt that there's always that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you look, talk it as a positive or not, mindset, I'm not sure, but I just always felt that in me, innately in me. And to your point, when Mum passed, I could not find one reason why this has happened, because she was just loved and adored by so many people, you know. And I'm so proud to even be able to say that, right, that my mum was adored by so many people came across her path. And I couldn't for the life of me understand the reason for this. And that was where, to your point, I felt that, well, that's just bullshit, because how can this be a good thing? And what I sort of came to an eventual conclusion for me around that, just to try and help me, was that, as I said before, Mum was an enormous influence on me as a kid and my view on the world and how I live my life today. She was incredible work ethic. Like, when she was sick, and I mean sick, Mum never had to work. Dad was the provider of the family. Dad was an extremely hard worker, enormous work ethic. And Mum also had that enormous work ethic as well. She stayed at home whilst we were all at schools, which I was so grateful for as a kid, and Aaron's the same, that I wanted that for Levi, Mum's home for them. And Aaron can work if she wants to, but the point is that ideally, you know, given if you're in a situation, and we're really fortunate that we're in a situation that we can have one parent working, even though we weren't at all wealthy growing up, but we may do, but what was more important to mum and dad was that mum was there for us kids. And anyhow, when we finished school, mum went and got herself a part-time job because she wanted to work, she wanted to contribute. When she was sick, she still continued to do that job. I remember she was going through her chemo and she was still working because she just wanted to have a meaning, some form of meaning outside of the many other things in her life, and work was one of those things. And so there was an enormous work ethic there that mum had. And, you know, so that was a big influence on me. And, yeah, coming back to the meaning that I had for mum.
We were saying the whole everything happens for a reason, but you couldn't reconcile that with her death. And you were, I think, heading on the fact that she was so awesome, but it was then made it harder to reconcile, even more hard, I guess, to reconcile the everything happens for a reason thing, because she was so cool and she was always home and parented you guys so intensely.
Yeah, she was such a huge influence, and one of those, with the work ethic, and then obviously her empathy and her love and just kindness, and she had an enormous heart, an enormous influence on me in growing up and to who I am today. So for me to reconcile and come to a conclusion as to perhaps why this has happened when it shouldn't have happened to someone as amazing as mum, was that she's now in a position, because I believe there isn't, I'm not talking about God or anything, but I believe there is a more powerful spiritual universe or realm that mum's a part of now. And from there, I feel that she's in an even more powerful position to be able to guide me during my life, right? So that's sort of how I've reconciled, in that she's in a more powerful position to help me with knowing even more so what I need and how I handle things in life. Even now, like things are, certain aspects are a little tough in my life at the moment, but I just feel like she's guiding me more than ever. And that's how I sort of reconciled her not being here anymore. Is it?
She's always with you.
Yeah, she's been able to put herself in a position, almost sacrifice herself to be an even better mum. So I eventually came to a conclusion like that, and that's what I've hung on to. Just helped. Mm-hmm.
I think death is just, it's so, one of my favorite analogies for it is when someone dies, you put a ring on. And initially when you put that ring on, you feel it all the time, right? It feels awkward. It brushes against you. It could sometimes pinch you and be painful. And it's just constant that you notice that ring. And then in time, you don't notice it as much and it's just on and you don't feel it, but you never take it off and it's never not there. And you can sometimes, touch it to feel it, but it's always there. And I think, because so many times clients will say things to me like, why am I not over it yet? Or when is it going to stop? Or when is the pain going to go away? And I always share that analogy because it's like, I just think there's this really, like you said, raw, intense period at the beginning. And sometimes I think you can match that intensity at different periods of your life. I think when you go through transitions yourself, or there's big milestones that you would want her to be at, like your wedding or something like that, like these, or the birth of Levi, wanting her to be there and then not. I think there's these moments where then it's like, God, it feels like it's yesterday that it's happened because the pain is so intense again of missing them. But I guess the hope that I think you just have communicated so beautifully is that you can just sort of reframe their presence in your life, that it's not a physical presence. It's better than that. You get to have an emotional, spiritual, psychological presence with them forever that can never be taken away from you.
No, and they're there when you need them. Those signs do pop up. And you just know, even if it's just knowing that they're there, it's just feels like it. And you think about things do pop in your head and you sort of wonder where'd that come from. And so
Do you have any signs that are unique to your mom that whenever you see like a butterfly or the number 7, or I don't know, is there anything that is special for you and your mom that sometimes makes you go, oh, hey, mom?
Well, it's funny. It's mom and dad now, to be honest. Like, mom was born on the 9th of November. You know, dad, so when I see, I know at first I see 9/11 a lot, and I used to think, oh, I wonder if that's a being an American, you would understand,
totally.
But I every time I see that a lot, I just, mum's birthday, you know, and dad's birthday since, you know, is on the 11th. So the 9 and the 11 together, it just feels like for me, I don't know. Yeah. But I agree.
Who cares? Whether you believe
it or not, who cares? It's what does it mean to me and what does that do for me is all that matters, right? And I feel that that's a positive and that I can look at that. And even if it makes me think of them, and when I do think of them, I do think gratitude, just positivity. So if that's a little burst of happiness just because I see that, then okay, why not? Yeah.
Totally. And I think whenever, you know, clients will say something like, and then a ladybug landed on my hand and I think it was my mom, or, you know, a butterfly flew across my windscreen and I think it was my brother. I am just like, of course it was. Awesome. Yeah. Like, and so you hear so many people who get critical of that and like, or tease them and think like, okay, your brother's, but I'm just like, one, how do we know? How do we really know? There's no way that we could for sure know everything and know that that's not possible. And then also I think it's the whole kind of, which side do you prefer to look at, you know, the shadow or the light? Like, do you prefer to just look for the positives and look for, you know what, when I look at butterflies, if that makes me think of my brother, like, okay, then that's what I'm going to do. Like, it's not hurting anyone. I don't know.
Like the other, like last week, a couple of weeks ago, I had a client who, husband and wife, and unfortunately the husband passed away and he had Alzheimer's, which is really sad. It's really, really, and they're just beautiful couple and being clients of ours, you know, since day one, and just a really sad time for her, obviously. And she rang me and we were having a really long chat. She was, you know, in tears, and it was just a really emotional time. She was talking about how she wanted to, she was going to get him cremated. And how they went down to the cemetery and they were talking about where he could be put in, into a wall. And she got there, she said, Brennan, I just had this unbelievable, overwhelming feeling that this wasn't right. I don't know what it was. I've never felt like this before. I just felt, no, I can't do this. And her daughter really wanted to. Her daughter was with her at the time. And her daughter really wanted to. And she said, I can't do this. And so we left and we went to, I think she said, Springvale Cemetery, which I don't know if you've been there. It's actually beautiful grounds.
Yeah, it's huge. And,
yeah, it's enormous and really beautiful grounds there. And they said, let's just go and have a look. And the lady said, well, there's, in a certain area, there's these two plots left. And the plot was number, and I can't remember the number, but let's call it number 11. And number 11 was the house number in which they live. And she said, I got there, I just had this overwhelming feeling that this is where he wanted to be. You know, and the fact that there was only two left and we found the one that had our house number. And to me, I just said to her, to me, that is him talking to you.
Totally.
And I believe that there was, he wanted, you know, and then she can be there as well and so can the daughter, and they bought both pots.
Mm.
I just think that there is that element out there. Yeah. And I think if you, that's a positive. Yeah.
Because I think it doesn't hurt you. It only helps you. And, you know, I always say, Lee always says, oh, what a coincidence. And I go, oh, it is not a coincidence. That is synchronicity. And it was meant to be, you know, and I'm very much like into the woo woo and stuff like that. But yeah, I think it's just a choice really, isn't it? Of which way you want to look at it, that it's random, you know?
Yeah. It's, you get to choose how you feel about something. That's the whole thing in life, I think, that you get to decide then how you react, the emotion that you feel as a result of what it is, whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. You get to choose, and I think there's a lot of power in that. And I think we typically, you would see this a lot, I'd imagine, is that we tend to forget that we have that power to choose, and it can change how you think or feel about something in an instant by just changing your perception of that. that you, you know, you can look at something and instead of looking at it in a negative way, say, well, how can that be a good thing? Or how can, it's not to say that it doesn't hurt, it doesn't take that pain away or the whatever it is, the anxiety or the angst or whatever it is that you're feeling, it doesn't mean it can, you don't, you know, have to not feel those things. It's just recognizing them and then choosing how you then respond or react at that point. I think there's a lot of power in that.
I agree. I just wrote down while you were saying that you get to choose how you feel. I think that is such a powerful reminder. I feel like we all learn that at some point, that you have a light bulb moment, either from Tony, a book, therapy. For me, it was in therapy. I remember my therapist saying that when I was in my early 20s, when I was depressed and I was just like, my brain just exploded. Like, what do you mean I can choose? Mm-hmm. Like, no, the way I feel is always a response to my environment and the things that quote unquote happen to me. Right. And her saying like, no, you can wake up every morning and you can choose to be happy, or you can choose to look for the positive, or you can choose. And it was then just a slow process of my brain just mushing around and just flipping to viewing it in a different way. And then that's something obviously I try to work on with clients. But what would you say to people when you get into those situations, like with a parent dying? How do you navigate that then? Because, you know, I think that's where we could all go, yeah, view it positively and you get to choose how you feel. But then I think if we were to, you know, encounter someone who's just lost a parent, they would go, no, I am not choosing how I feel. I feel like crap and I don't feel like I have a choice. How would you navigate that?
Yeah, I don't think that having a choice means that you don't have to feel sad. Mm-hmm. Like, how you feel is how you feel. So if you've just lost a parent, you're entitled to grief. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think if you live in that for too long, then it can become a real issue for you. And that can send you down a path that you don't want to be a part of. And that's where you can really then start to manifest a really poor mental state. So I think this is, again, I'm not qualified in any of this. This is just, I'm not trying to tell, you know better than me, but for me, it's like, I think you can feel the way you feel. People feel anger, they feel sadness, they feel frustration, anxiety, all those things. And that's okay. It's more about recognizing that and saying, okay, that's okay. I feel this and that's okay. But I'm also not going to live here. All right. I can feel this for a period of time, but I'm not going to live here and allow it to then dictate how I live the rest of my life. And I think it comes a point where we sort of say, okay, well, think back to mum and dad and, Dad, like, you know, I mean, my God, what he gave me in a different sense to what mum did in the business and teaching me finance and teaching me the ropes, teaching me how to run a business, just incredible what dad had given me. And but when he died, now I've lost both parents, right? So anyone that's ever felt that probably understands when I say it feels like you've lost your safety net in life. You know, that's how it felt for me, that you always had your mum and dad, despite whatever in your life, you've got your mum and dad. Having them not there, it does feel like you no longer have that safety net in life. And that's how it felt for a long time, and the grief of losing dad. But I also recognize that, okay, this is how I'm feeling right now. And that's okay, because I am sad. I miss him deeply. But I can't now allow me not to live my life. I look at the legacy that he's left, and this is a choice, right, in my mind. I can either take this legacy that he's left and I can let it die with him, or I can choose to take this legacy and make it bigger and better and greater and more impactful than it ever was. He's giving me this platform and this foundation in which he's handed over to me to now build into something bigger and better, and to help more people have a larger reach than he could during his time. So that to me is a choice. So I prefer to look at building his legacy rather than allowing it to die with him. Mm-hmm. It's not to say that I wasn't sad or that I was, you know, in a really bad state emotionally around trying to deal with that loss and losing your safety net. That's what I mean by choice. It's not that you don't have to not feel these emotions or that you try and be positive. I don't think that that is sustainable, and I don't think that that will get you through long term. There's got to be a real meaning and reason behind the choice that you make. But sometimes that takes time, and it's different for everyone. Yeah.
Did you find with your dad that because you had previous experience with it, because I think one of the things that I'm assuming was hard about your mom's death is it was the first time. And I think that first loss, like our first, I call it the first dance with death, the first time we dance with it on an intimate level, not like a distant, you know, grandparent or relative that you didn't know that much or didn't have a good relationship. That first death dance that is, oh, just the gut-wrenching, takes your breath away. You can't think straight. Time stands still. That's what it felt like to me. The first death I went through was that, yeah, time stood still. It was like, it was as if like the, you know, that scene in like movies where the calendar flips through and it just flips to show the progress of time. It just felt like the calendar was flipping, but I was at a standstill. And then also that feeling where the emotion is so close to the surface that if anyone even remotely, you know, mentioned your mom's name, it would send you into tears or whatever, you know, like that real raw, raw, raw feeling.
Yeah.
I think when you have the first one, that's really hard and you got through that. Then with your dad, was there any element of like, okay, I know I can get through this because I didn't think I could get through mom and I did. I know I will get through this. I know how the sting is very intense initially and then the sting lessens a bit in time. Or was it like, nope, all that goes out the window and it was just like being a rookie again and doing it from scratch? Or how did you, I guess then, so that's one question. And then also, how did you approach dad's death differently than you did? Because obviously you would have learned a lot going through your mom's death. So how did you do your dad's death differently then?
I agree 100% with you in that first one, because up until that point, right, I was 30 when mum passed. Mm. Up until that point, I haven't had to deal with anything remotely as devastating as that. And you don't know how to navigate it because it's all new, right? You're just trying to work your way through it and understand how you're feeling and so on. And that, I think, getting past mum took much longer. When I say get past mum, getting to that point where the wound has healed enough where I can still, we can have a conversation and it brings up emotions, but I can deal with it and I can spend the, you know, I can go on with my day, whereas in the past I couldn't. Mm-hmm. That does take a period of time. When it came to, you know, because it's all new, when it came to dad, it was just no different for me in the feeling as it was when mum passed. But I think what happened was I was able to get to that point where the wound wasn't as open for as long because I've experienced it before, that I knew, to your point, 100%, that I know that I will get through this. I know that as hard as this is right now, I will get through this. And that was really what made the period of time where the wound is less open, that I was able to get to that point much quicker. But still today, it rocks me to talk about it, but I can move on and enjoy the rest of my day, if you like. Mm-hmm. Whereas in the past, I would be perhaps not be able to do that. Maybe I'll be inconsolable. I wouldn't be able to even talk to you without breaking down. And so, yeah, I think it does build strength. Adversity, no doubt, builds strength. You know that better than anyone. It does build strength. And, again, it comes back to that point, like I'm saying, it's not that you don't have to not feel these emotions. It's, you know, we're humans that you're going to. Just your ability to deal with it, I think you become a little stronger having been through it. And then you get to the point where you sort of start to think sooner about how can I make this, what's the reason for this, and how can I make my life better as a result for having my parents in it. And that's where that gratitude also comes in too. You become more grateful now that you don't have that, whereas I was focusing with mum more about the loss rather than what I had. So I guess through with dad, having learned that with mum, that I became more just that gratitude towards having mum for 30 years and the relationship that I had her for 30 years. I think about people who don't never had a parent or didn't have that relationship, then they live to their 100 or 80 years of age. I prefer to have the 30 years I had with mum and the quality I had rather than have another 20 years or 30 years and have 1 ounce less quality relationship. So you sort of, you build that resilience and become more grateful for what you had as opposed to focusing on what you no longer have. I think that happens with dad.
Yeah. And then that would make me think then too that in the years that you had with him after your mom passed, that you probably were more conscious and you were more present and you were more aware in your time with him, because having sampled that taste with your mom and going, oh, this is what it tastes like, you know, that bit of regret or that bit of, did I spend enough time with her? And, oh, I wish I had, had lunch with her more. I don't know, whatever the thing is. Then being more conscious and just awake with your dad, then that probably meant that the years with your dad after that were so much more rich and so much more connected, because you then knew.
Yeah. And look, even more so for dad and I, especially because, I've got a brother and sister, but more so for dad and I, because I started working with dad when I was 27, nearly 20 years ago. So we spent a lot of time together, so I could see firsthand what he was dealing with as well in losing his life partner, that I became even closer at that point with dad. For the reason that you're saying is that you want to have that relationship because you don't want to have regret about, did I spend enough time with him? And we became closer as a result of mum's passing as well. We were always close as well. Like dad was, but even more so, I think at that point, we certainly, you're more conscious of time together. And you want to make it quality time.
Mm-hmm.
One thing, just hearing you too, like you talk about, and I'd imagine that, maybe in your, this is just me and my experience. You're the expert in this, but I hear you say, the word regret.
Mm-hmm.
And I think back with mum at times, and I think back with dad, and you sit there and you think, geez, I wish maybe I should have gone around there that day. Or I very quickly dismissed that because I just felt for me that it served nothing but pain. Not that I ever have enormous regret, but I just felt, what can I do now to change that? Like maybe I should have not blowing dad off on the phone because I was busy with work or, that time that I could have gone to see mum and I didn't, because you think about those things. But I very quickly got past that in my mind and I just stopped and didn't allow myself to go down that path, because all it would do would hurt. And also too, at the time, it felt like what I was doing was what I needed to do for whatever reason. So I was very quickly got past regret because it doesn't serve me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm conscious of living life now as with Levi, but there's times with your kids where you go, geez, give me a break, I just need a rest. Whereas if he was no longer here, you'd be, well, geez, I'll take that moment in a heartbeat. But I don't think we can live our life perfectly. And we make choices based on how we feel at the time. So regret for me was something that I didn't allow to enter into my mind. You sort of keep, be the gatekeeper of your mind, as Tony would say, and don't allow that to get in there, because again, it will not serve you positively at all. What you can do now is focus on how you live your life from this point on, I guess. Yeah,
I totally agree. I love a Tonyism of where your focus goes, your energy flows, and that it's just such wasted energy to think about what I should have done, what I could have done. And I think it just leads also to a lot of paralysis. I feel like whenever I've allowed myself to go into that space and spend a lot of time there and get real cozy in the what I've done wrong and this shouldn't have happened and why did this happen and, oh, this is my fault or this is their fault and blaming them or blaming me, it just keeps you stuck. And oftentimes when I meet clients that's one of the words that they use to identify how they feel, it often highlights to me that there's a piece of blame going on, that I'm either blaming myself or blaming them or blaming God or blaming whatever, that this happened. And whilst I appreciate that, and I think that sometimes, like we said at the beginning, it's raw and just feel what you want to feel. If you want to blame, if you want to whatever, just go nuts with that. But then know that in time you'll want to shift out of it, because it's sort of like sitting in shit. Like after a while, it starts to smell. You just get over it. You realize how much it's holding you back. You realize how miserable you are. And that's then, I think, the catalyst. That's then the piece, I think, is where you go, I'm done with this. I'm just satiation point. I've hit it. I'm out. You know, like Tony said, I saw in an interview he did with Oprah once, when he explained the satiation point, that if I said to you, you know, what would you like to eat for a meal? You would say lobster. And he says, well, yeah. And if you had lobster for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, you'll hit your satiation point. You'll get to a point where you're over it and you've had it too much. And that's why, you know, his whole thing about you change in an instant. It's actually not months or weeks that it takes you to change. It's actually in a moment that you decide, I'm done. And you get to that point with lobster where you go, I'm actually sick of lobster, right? And I think it's that moment of how do we, I don't know if expedite's the right word, but I guess the, how do we get to that point quicker? Cause I know when I hear myself and hear the way I'm speaking to myself of like wanting to be in the wallow, pity, blamey, yuck room in my mind, I want to get up and I want to walk across the hall and I want to get into the bright space that I know is just where I feel empowered and strong and resilient, rather than helpless, powerless, capable, victim-y, you know, like sitting in that space where I'm blaming everything. I want to go across to the other side. How do you find that has happened for you? For me, it's happened through just practice and just being, as Tony says, the gatekeeper, that I just get quicker and quicker. And just every time I have an opportunity to pick my thoughts, the super negative or the positive, or just, and I don't even like that language of positive, negative. I prefer to say, what's this here to teach me? What can I learn from this situation? And then I focus on the learning and the teaching and the, how this can help me grow and evolve, rather than I hate positive and negative. I feel like then anyway, that for me has been practice. What has that been for you of how do you do that quickly? Cause you know how initially when you start doing it, it takes a while. And then after you've been doing it for a while, you can do it almost autopilot, you know?
And that's 100% the key, right? Again, you can feel what you feel. I mean, and you should. You just be aware of how you're feeling. Like, be aware of it. Well, okay, and then you ask yourself a question. Is that true? You know, how I'm feeling, is that actually true? And you go, okay, well, maybe they weren't even thinking of me when they said that or that they did that. I think that we tend to believe in our own, we manifest stories in our own head about situations. And if you just stop and ask yourself that simple question, is what I'm thinking really true? And even then, is the outcome really going to be that outcome? So quite often if I'm in a situation where something's happened and it affects upset, or I'm frustrated or I'm angry or whatever it is, okay, I feel that and I live in that for a moment, but then I stop and I just simply ask myself that question. I'll go for a walk or whatever, I jump on my bike or whatever I do, and I'll ask myself that question, is that really true? And then you sort of go, okay, well, maybe it isn't. Maybe it could be this. Mm-hmm. You know, you sort of start to think about other alternatives. And even then, if it is true, well, what does it really mean? Okay, if it means that I have to do this, well, how bad is that? And what can I do to get past that? What's in my control that I can take control of, that I can focus on? And that's where I sort of deal with those sort of things, is that, yep, I acknowledge that this is how I'm feeling, but I don't live there. I try as best as I can to think about alternatives. And that takes practice, right? It's like even with Tony, like you go to a seminar with Tony, and I before you went, I said it's like drinking water out of a fire hose, right? It's just all this information, yes, right? You're trying to take it all in and you're like, I don't, but it's all he's doing, he's giving you tools and strategies to allow you to deal with things in life, whatever that might be, and whether that's something that's bad that's happened or something that, or you want to, you're an achiever and you want to take it to another level. How can you then, what sort of mindset can you have in order to get to that next level? If you just want a closer relationship with your son or with your husband or whatever it might be, these are the tools that you can use, the strategies you can use and get there, which is great. It's like going to the gym, isn't it? I go to the gym, I buy my membership, and all the tools and all the things that I need are there to build a healthy, flexible, strong body. But I've got to do the work. So it's that thing that you've got to make sure that you continue to practice. You don't go to gym for a week and you've got the body and the strength that you want and that's it for the rest of your life. It's just something that you've got to constantly work at. And that's the same with the way that you view the world and the way that you view situations and whether or not you can sit there and say, well, what's in my control and what can I focus on that I can control, or allowing you to be consumed by things that aren't in your control and then take over your life. So to me, it's just a matter of practicing. You go to the gym and you lift weights and it's a physical thing. No different with the mental side of things. You give yourself the period of time to accept and feel the feeling that you're feeling, but then allowing yourself to go, okay, how can I change how I'm feeling? Instead of letting that monster build and grow and then take over your life, most people have to wait until for that moment of change until it's too much. But if you can train your brain to recognize it very early, you can wallow in it or feel it for however long, for a period of time, but not allowing that to then be a place that you'll live. I think that just takes time. You've just got to continually practice it. And then it becomes, from my experience, and then it becomes something that is just natural. It's no longer something you have to work at. Like I think about the gym, right? You know that I love going to gym. I go to gym 7 days a week. I do some sort of physical activity 7 days a week. Then I'll have a week off every 6 weeks, right? I now, for people say to me, oh, my God, how do you have the willpower? And I always say, well, I have as much willpower as you, you know, but it's not willpower that gets me to go to the gym every day. It's effectively a part of who I am now. Like it's part of my identity. Like without going to the gym now, if I like this period right we're going through right now, it's been really challenging, right?
Yeah.
Because I no longer have that outlet. But now for me, it's like you getting up and, you know, not brushing your teeth and going out. You know, it's just something you don't do. You just do it. Like it's just a natural, there's no willpower. There's no, you're not pushing yourself to do it. That's how I feel about physical fitness. Like it's just something I do because it's part of who I am. It's part of my identity. And that can be built in any area of your life. Your constant repetition and practice. That's why I say to Levi every time, just keep practicing. What happens when you practice, mate? You get better, Dad, you know? And that's the same with anything. It's the same with how you handle negative feelings or frustrations, whatever it is in life. How do you handle that? Again, it's practicing. Okay, what is it? Why am I feeling this way? Is it true? What can I do that's within my power to take control so I can feel better? For me, like anything in life, if you constantly practice it, it becomes easier and you become better at it. So yeah, that for me is how I think you can get to a point where you can actually move on quicker than you would normally.
Yeah. And I love the gym analogy because I think a lot of people think, okay, I get habits, I get patterns with physical fitness. I get that with eating well or keeping the house clean, you know, just constantly tidy a little bit every day and then you'll keep it clean. But I think people often forget that analogy is true with the mind and that nobody who is like super happy got that way by accident. Like no one who's super mentally successful in their mental health, that they're stable, they're regulated emotionally, they're happy, they're positive. You know, nobody I know has got to that point without shitloads of adversity and lots of challenge, but also learning this exact little trick that we're talking about, this hack of you have to choose. None of us have had some sort of skate life that you skate through that's super simple. And, you know, we got all the beautiful cards dealt to us. And no. Like I am this way, the way that I, like the lens through which I choose to see the world, came from a whole lot of pain and a whole lot of suffering. And then the realization, oh my God, it's actually me. Mm. I'm the one that's actually in control of whatever life throws at me, because at the end of the day, it's always me and my lens and how I choose to see it. And that is practice. And that I think when you're starting is so hard because it feels so insurmountable. And clients will say that to me all the time. Yeah, but I don't know, how do I change the way I think, or how do I change the way I feel? And I'm like, dude, it's the same way you change anything else in your life. If you want to get fit, exactly what you said, you don't go to the gym for a week. You don't go once a year. Right. It's every single day. And it's a constant repetition, you know?
And you don't expect that, okay, I've done this for a week and I'm okay. Like, it's like going to the gym. You don't go to the gym and expect to lift the weight or run the at a pace for a period of time that someone's been doing it for 10 years. It's the same with the mind, and you just got to set those little goals and just see progression. Tony talks a lot about the meaning of life is progress. If you're not growing as a person, then you're dying. Right. So it doesn't have to be these enormous leaps and bounds that you have to make. They just need to be small incremental changes that over time will build. You read a book, The Slight Edge, it's all about that. Just every day, you just do this small little bit. If you compound that over 365 days in a year, from now to the end of the year, the change is going to be enormous. Just, you can't expect that change to be really, really quick. You just got to work through that. And, you know, one little, you mentioned the word hack, which I love, right? One hack that Tony talks about is that, as a starting point, is not allowing yourself to live in that emotion for a long, he calls it the 90 second rule. He won't allow himself to think in more than 90 seconds. So he's allowing himself that period of time to feel what he feels. And that's what I'm saying. That's okay. You have to, you're in a human being. But then at that point you go, okay, now I'm done in my self-pity. I'm now going to focus on these things that can help me try and come to an understanding so I can deal with this and move on. One thing he says is that, okay, I have the negative thought hits my head, because we do, right? We all have them. I don't care who you are. Everyone has these negative thoughts and feelings at times in their life, some more than others, because some have had worse things to deal with than others, and I appreciate that. But we all still have the same tool to be able to deal with that, and that is just look at it and say, okay, You see the thought go above your head, and you look up and you see it and you go, oh, there it is. Oh, geez, you're really having a crack at me today, aren't you, mind? Like, sort of separate your mind from you with your thoughts. It's just this 2-million-year-old brain that's trying to play tricks on you. You go, geez, you're having a crack today, and I can see your thought. And you just go, oh, there it is. All right, see you later, and let it, you know, wave it off, right? And then get back to thinking positive, or not positive, but thinking about something that's not going to feel that same emotion. That's, I think, is a really good starting point. I talked about, you know, going to the gym and just walking on a treadmill. Well, this, to me, that's a really good starting point, is just seeing the thought, recognizing it. I think that's a real key, is recognizing the thought, stopping yourself. Because you know how you get into that feeling, and you made a comment, I heard you say before, that you feel comfortable and you're just like a warm bath sometimes in feeling, you know, those bad emotions. We all do it. But recognizing it, I think, is a key, and then just stopping yourself and just saying, ah, my brain's having a real good go at me today. It's playing that trick on me. All right, good on you, and then move on. I think that's a good little hack, if you like it. Mm-hmm.
I think you're right, too. It has to be acknowledged, because that's the thing. We betray ourselves a lot, I think, with the way that we feel. And we say to ourselves, you shouldn't feel that way. Stop feeling like that. You know, shake it off. Let it go. Why are you letting this bother you? And that, I'm always like, dude, when clients say that stuff, like, that's not helpful. It just makes it go on for longer. And the 90 second thing, I first heard about that from Jill Bolte Taylor. She has a really cool TED talk called Stroke of Insight, where she had a stroke and then it literally changed the entire way that she sees the world because of the part of her brain that it impacted. Wow. And in her TED talk, she explained, I don't know if it was her TED talk or podcast, but whatever, she explains that it's actually 90 seconds. So there's science behind it too. There's 90 seconds that a hormone like cortisol or adrenaline is released and you feel the feeling for 90 seconds. You have no choice. Your body is going to take over with hormones. You will feel the feeling, but then at 90 seconds, you have a choice. At 90 seconds, the hormones have stopped. Yeah. They're not circulating anymore. And then any thought, feeling, whatever that goes on beyond that is choice. And when I learned that science, I was like, oh my gosh. So if an hour later, I'm still holding the incident or the argument or the thing that happened before, that's on me. Yeah. And I'm choosing that suffering because that's the space I'm choosing to sit in.
Yeah. 100%. And look, in hearing, you know, you and I talking like this, it's not that we don't have those moments where you sitting
there,
right? Yeah, that's, but again, it just comes back to that recognizing it and just practicing, just being aware is the first point, I think. And then, you know, having a tool or strategy to ask yourself those questions that I mentioned before to try and help you get past it so you can get out of that and you can progress and you can grow. Because when you're progressing and you're growing, anytime that you've ever improved in anything, whether that be, might be depending on your audience, your golf game or your tennis or even the way that you react to your kids, when you're improving and growing or learning, you feel better, you feel good. And that comes back to then, if you're not, if you're struggling with a situation and you find that you're progressing with being able to deal with it, you just, momentum builds on itself. Momentum's enormous in the direction of your life. So if you can build positive momentum and in those small incremental steps, that momentum will become a snowball effect and it will just, it will be hard to stop, and it's not then an effort. It becomes natural, but it can also, that snowballing effect or the momentum can also take you in the other direction where you can't stop those negative thoughts. So that's where the control and the choice comes in. And so it's just a slow, progressive, day-by-day practicing of those type of methods and strategies to help.
I totally agree. And momentum, I think, is so key. I love that you drew on the fact of it can also work negatively. Because I, like, when I think about the way that I used to think in my early 20s when I was depressed, that is exactly how it was. And it was literally like a snowball. I could feel it even as like the day would end and all the social interaction would sort of stop. And then you're really left alone with your thoughts for a long period of time. It would just go in this big, everything's horrible. Nobody likes me. Everything is bad. And one of my favorite things that hacks that piggybacks a little bit on what you started with of the question of, is it true? This is how I learned how to do it, was that question. So I don't know if you know Byron Katie, but Byron Katie, she has this, she's amazing. She has this, I don't know, technique, I guess you could call it, called the four questions. And so anytime you have a thought or a feeling, you ask yourself, and the first question is it true? Yeah, and then the second question is, can I absolutely know for sure that it's true? And then you usually will catch yourself on that one, right?
Yeah.
And then the third one is, how do you react when you believe this thought? And that's usually where you start to spin around and see yourself outside of it and go, well, I feel crap, or it makes me feel like a loser, or it makes me feel unloved or stupid or whatever. And then, so right then you start to shift. And then the fourth question is, who would you be without this thought? And then it's like, bing.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
And then the fifth step is you reframe it. So if it's that thought was I'm stupid or whatever, then so who would I be without that thought? Or how would I react when I believe that? Well, I feel bad about myself. And who would I be without that? Well, I'd be really empowered and happy and positive if I reframed that thought to something different. So then it becomes, you know, I'm doing my best, or I'm just trying, or I'm learning, or whatever. And then you sit in the reframed thought rather than focusing on that initial one. But I think even just, if that's too hard for people to remember, just starting with what you said, is it true? It's such a great, so did you learn that from Tony, or where did you learn that?
Well, I'm just thinking, that gave me a cassette tape, so it shows how old I am. But that gave me a cassette tape, I reckon, when I was 16 or 17 of Tony.
Of Tony? No way. Oh, you're old school. You're OG.
I got to tell him that story.
Tony? Really? Yeah. When? At which event? Because I know you've done a lot of his stuff. Which event was that? The Fiji one?
Yeah, in Fiji. So it was a small group and I got to go and have a chat with him. And I went up to him and I just, you know, obviously I just thanked him for the influence. And I just told him the story about how when I was, you know, 16 or 17, Dad gave me a cassette tape of his, that just one tape, you know, there was a 15 tapes, but I don't know even where Dad got this tape from. But he came home and he said to me that you know, because he sort of knows my personality. Obviously, he knows my personality, but he goes, I think you would, you know, of all the three kids, he gave it to me because he knows that I love that. I've always been that sort of way. And he gave me this tape, and obviously he's been an influence in my life ever since then. I got to tell him this story and how grateful I am, and how grateful I am to Dad that he recognised that in me and that he felt that this would be great. And Tony started crying. It was quite emotional. Yeah, he's big hug. And I got a photo. Someone took a photo of us having that conversation. There's a photo of us around it. And, yeah, so that cried with joy.
Oh, dude.
I got
he's such a presence, is he? I mean, I've never been that close to him, but I remember, so my Tony experience was from you, where you gave me you burned me a whole bunch of DVDs, because that's what we used to do back in the day. And those were game changing. What book was that? I don't even remember. What was that? What was that? Awaken the Giant? No.
What was that? Jeez, I forgot what it was called.
I don't remember what that was, but that sort of set my interest. And then I did UPW last year. And I have never, like, I've been to concerts. I've seen Oprah. I've seen lots of people, you know, in person. The presence that man has is something I've never experienced in my entire life. Like, when he came on stage, it was literally like electric. And this is like saying from like bands that I've seen, like legends, you know, and nothing compared. It's just, I don't know what is going on in his body, but he just is electric.
He is a force of nature. Yeah. And, you know, I've always said, like, I don't give those tapes to just anyone, or I don't really talk to people and try and influence the analysts at all. I never do that, because each their own. If someone comes to me and asks me something and I go, what do you think of it? And I go, have a listen to this and see if I never force, because people, unfortunately, people can look at it as a not what it really stands for, and that there's an alternative motive. And for me, it's, well, I get a lot out of it, and that's great for me. I'm not going to force it on you. It's like anything, like religion, right? I have my belief. I see no reason why I should have to force that onto you, and because you don't agree with it, that you're wrong. No, here's Tony Robbins. If you love him, hate him, whatever, that's fine. It works for me. I just find an enormous amount of power out of it. Yeah, I don't know. I just find that what he says and how he says it makes sense for most of the time. You don't have to agree with everything that he says. You just take the bits that you can resonate with and that you can then perhaps incorporate into how you view your world and your life. Yeah, and that to me has been an enormous influence. But yeah, he's an incredible human. Yeah, there's been a large number of people coming into that space. But for me, I don't know, it resonates more with what he says than anyone else, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Was your first thing that you went to of his live UPW, or did you go to something else?
No, the first one I went to was Date with Destiny.
No way. That's intense to jump into that first, because that's, what is that, a week with him?
6 days, yeah. And, you know, as you know, like, we're not talking 5-hour days. We're talking 8, 9 o'clock in the morning, sometimes 2, 3 in the morning, right?
Yeah.
And you're going the whole time. It's just,
I remember, before we went to UPW, I remember you saying it's like 8 or 9 a.m. start, 10, 11 p.m. finish. And I remember being like, hawa. And then you said, too, he keeps it polar, like it's like an ice, like it's like a freezer in there. So bring your warm jacket and your beanie and stuff. And I'm so glad you told me that, because it, you know me, I'm always cold. I would have died if I had not had my ski jacket and beanie and stuff. But yeah, it's very intense. And it's like a club, like the lights, the music, like, which I know is all designed to keep you awake. But
it's all designed. When we sit down at a seminar, right, you'll be lucky to take in 20% of the content. But what he does is that he gets you moving, he gets you dancing, he gets you celebrating. And what that does, when you're in a state like that, you have a high capacity to not only take in, but absorb and retain the information. So, and that's what, it seems like a really long day, but you get to 10 o'clock at night and go, I can't believe I have this amount of energy just flowing through my veins right now. Like, it's just an incredible feeling, as you know, and you get up and you repeat it the next day, you know.
Totally. I remember you telling me how you ran sprints after one of the nights. And I remember you told me that. And I was like, dude, Brendan is nuts. Like running sprints after like a 12-hour day sitting and like listening to seminar, like listening to people talk all day. And then no joke, that first night, because I think the first night is a fire walk. And correct. So then you're even more at UPW. Yeah. And so I was even more pumped up. But I remember saying to Lee, it makes sense, doesn't it, now that we've done it, like that Brendan said I was running sprints in the park afterwards.
Yeah, like, you know, that was, and that, you know, that was a business mastery seminar, right? What?
Yeah, oh, was my God.
Business mastery seminar, it was out in Melbourne. And so it was all obviously about running a business, but there's a lot more to that. Like running a business isn't about being the smartest person in the room. It's about the emotion and the mindset that you bring, your outlook on things, like your, you know, as he says, 20% skill and 80% psychology, right, in running a business. But yeah, so that was, I remember one of the days I got home at 12:30, 1 o'clock in the morning after being there all day, and I was just so fired up, and I went down and I could not go. I just put my running shoes on, 1 o'clock in the morning, and I was literally sprinting up and down the oval. And anyone that saw me would have thought I was some crazy bloke running from something I'd done wrong, probably. But, yeah, and I just needed to release this energy. I mean, that's what it can do. That's what a state that you can put yourself in. And this is, you know, some of the biggest things that Tony does. He helps you put yourself in this state that you can then tackle anything. And that, again, talking about a tool, and you can do that. You've seen it, right? You've experienced it, right? You can put yourself in a state where you can be just a force of nature. You have that ability within you, and you can do it in an instant. It's just understanding that and bringing that out of you, the tools in allowing you to do that. Once you know that and you understand it, you can do it at any point.
Yeah. That's the biggest thing I think he taught me too, was the how to change your state. Cause you know how, like, I think it's the first day of most of his stuff, he goes through the state, and learning about that and realizing again, choice and how much power I have and the ability to change my state. And so even when he was explaining like how he does it at his things with music and lights and dance and stuff like that, the first day, like I like to dance. I have no problem dancing, but even at that, like on the first day, I was like, okay, this is a bit ridiculous. This is a bit intense. Yeah. Everybody settle down. Let's turn the lights a little bit lower. Turn the music out. Like, chill out, man. We're here to learn. Come on. Yeah. And then, you know, by the fourth day, you're like all into it and like high-fiving strangers, you know. But that, what was so powerful with that is it made me realize how doable it was.
Yeah,
and so now when I get close to feeling like my temper is starting to go up, or I'm getting frustrated with my kids, or I'm feeling stressed, I have my playlist that we made right after Tony.
Yeah,
and I have my, which are a lot of the songs that he played at UPW. Yeah. And I just put the playlist on, or I start jumping or jumping jacks or running in place. Like a lot of the stuff that he taught us there to just change my physiology. And then that changes my state.
100%. Change of physiology is the first thing, right? You're talking about mental health, and to help with mental health, the first thing that you can do from it in your toolkit is to just even go move your body. I mean, not only will you feel it, but science tells us that that can have a profound impact on your mental health. So, yeah, and that's being able to, you have your own little move that you can then perform, that you repeat that, then it just triggers it. The minute you make that move, you put yourself in a certain state. It's so powerful. It's incredible. Yeah, and I remember my first date with Destiny, coming back to that. The first time, I'd never been, right? The first one, and everyone's dancing around. He hasn't even come out yet, right? And I'm sitting there with my hands crossed. I'm going, I'm not doing this. Are you kidding me? Like, by the end of the day, I'm up on the chair high-fiving everyone, you know. I was with you. I got a best mate, Patch. He's really starting to listen a lot to Tony. And again, he asked me, and I put him in the direction of where he can look. I don't volunteer it because I think it's a choice for people to make themselves. But he really, really wants to come. We're going to go this year. Obviously, it's going to be unlikely, but you know, hopefully next year he wants to go. He goes, but Mars, I'm not dancing. I go, I know, mate. I know you're not going there. knowing damn well by the end of the day.
Everyone does. And I think everyone goes into it thinking, Lee, for people who are listening, my husband Lee, he's the introverted of the introverts. Yeah. He hates dancing. He hates people. He just... And when you said that to him, when we were chatting to you about it and said, yeah, you know, the first day I had my arms crossed, I think he thought, yeah, that's going to be me the whole time. And nope. Yeah. Tony got to him as well. Dude, I could talk to you forever. I would love to do another one where we go through money mindset, finance stuff, because I feel like I could chat forever, but that people probably don't have a million hours to listen to us gas bag on. But could we do another one where we talk about money mindset, finance stuff? Because I think you have so much value and you've helped us so much in getting financially healthy and understanding that. Maybe we do that in another one. What do you think?
Yeah, sure. Happy to. Yeah. Sorry, we've just rambled on a fair bit today.
But this is powerful. I think we've said some good. I hope we've said some good stuff. I think we've said some things that are interesting and helpful.
I mean, again, as you know, like you're the one that understands the science behind making your life better. I've tried to make my life better from listening to people like yourself and educating myself through people like Tony Robbins, but not limiting to that. Lots of podcasts and things are out there. I think the biggest thing around all of that is knowledge isn't power. Execution is where the power lies. So we can all be billionaires with rock hard abs if we want, because there is enough information that is accessible for the world. It's the execution of that I think where we let ourselves down.
Mm-hmm.
So it's great to have the knowledge and to hear us talk and so on, or and all your other guests, but then taking that information and actually doing something with it, as opposed to just sitting here going, oh, that was interesting. I think the biggest thing is actually taking that. And that's what I sort of mentioned before. Tony can give you all this information as one example. There's so much information out there. As one example, here's all this great information, tools and strategies. But what then matters is you taking that and incorporating it into your life. I think, and if you do that and you do it gradually, and just look for that, set yourself those goals, and just each day ask yourself the question, have I improved today? And it can be the smallest of things that if you do that, I think that you're going to have incredible life, would help enormously.
Yeah, I like to say if it's an opportunity to demonstrate change, and that's what happens is we get opportunities to demonstrate change. There's little things throughout the day that if you're, you know, saying, I want to work on my patience and, you know, yell at my kids less, then as you notice yourself about to do it, can you stop and catch yourself and go, oh, here's my opportunity for today to demonstrate change, and just 100%. Doing a little, practicing. Yeah, it goes back to practice.
Even if you just recognize that you're, okay, I'm yelling at the kids, do I need to? Whereas before you may not even consciously have had that thought. That's an improvement, right? Yeah, and I think that's why a lot of people sort of expect change. Like change can happen in an instant, but quite often that will happen over because you got yourself to a point where you can't handle anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But try and kill it when it's earlier. I think it's a real advantage. Yeah.
Hey, thanks for your time and for joining us in this chat. And then we'll organize to do another one about finance and money stuff. But how can people find you? Where do they go to find you if they want to work with you? Chat more, hear more about, because I don't know. I think what's cool is we are aligned in our like life philosophy or the way that we see the world. And I think sometimes if people are looking for a financial planner or consultant or something like that, that it's nice when you find people that are on the same page as you, their life philosophy or the way that they view the world, you know? So yeah, how can people find you? What's your website and contact details, et cetera?
Thanks, Heidi. So Halcyon Private Wealth is the company, and they can look us up on Halcyon Spout. And this is always Halcyon and a number of ways I've heard it being said, but halcyon.com.au. Yeah, I think is our website.
Yeah. No, we'll put it in the show notes. That's all right.
Never actually get on it. Yeah, Halcyon PW, beg your pardon.
There you go.
I reckon You reckon that'd be the first thing that I'll get right, wouldn't you? But housing PW, housing private wealth, yeah. Oh. So you get on there, you'll be able to contact me through there as well. Yeah.
Have you ever thought about doing like business coaching? Like I could see if I was a budding financial planner, starting my own financial planning or accounting business, that I would love to pick your brain for an hour to, do you do consulting coaching stuff at all?
No, but it's certainly on my goal list. Yeah, 100%. So with the business, obviously it what we do, bread and butter, is our priority. And we've just even now in the last bit of time, we feel like we've got the business, even though the business has been around for over 30 years, as you know, 35 years with my dad starting it and not being in it for 20. I feel like just only up until recently, we've got everything from a servicing point of view and the way that we provide that service, we've got that right. We're really, really proud, to be honest, and wrapped as to what we offer. So that was the start from a core point of view. Things in the future that I want to do is when I sort of can expand my role is around business coaching. I feel like you've got to have a fair bit of experience to have gone through a lot of things to be able to provide real value in that area. And I feel like that I'm at that point now. And but I'd love that opportunity. I would love to be able to help someone like that. Like I get a bit of a kick out of being able to share information that can help them. So yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Cool. And then, but for financial planning and insurance stuff, people can work with you obviously still until you get to that almighty wisdom stage where you're the wise old owl.
Yeah, that's right. I'm getting the gray hairs.
You're right on track.
I don't know what's happening there. But,
oh, thanks, dude. Well, yeah, we'll catch up again then to do money mindset stuff. And yeah, thanks for being on the show today.
Pleasure. Good to see you. Thanks, Heidi.
Thanks.
If you're a parent or a professional who works with children and you want my help in improving things with the kiddos in your life, or if you're simply a human being feeling kind of stuck and maybe kind of overwhelmed, my online programs have lots of resources, transformative content, one-on-one coaching, group coaching, and a supportive community. If you want to learn more, just go to HeidiRogers.com. All right, friends, thank you as always for tuning in today. Our time is our most precious asset, so I truly appreciate you sharing your time with me. I'll see you right back here for the next episode of Tell the Others.